This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning here with Koo Soo Chuang. It is exactly 6 a.m. in the morning, Tuesday, 18th of August. And, you know, this week is a kind of an odd week because in the middle of it all, we're going to have a short public holiday on Thursday and then we get back to work on Friday. So I don't know, you know, does this kind of disrupt the flow? Or do you enjoy these midweek vacations?
I've got an idea. How about we just go away on Thursday and don't come back on Friday and then pretend like nothing happened?
Firstly, I think I hope our listeners will miss us. Secondly, our bosses will kill us. So I'm not sure that's possible at all, you know. But I don't mind a little kind of a break in the middle of the week, you know. It gives me a chance to catch up on my, I would say, my addiction to this BBC player that I've been following and catching up on all these series I used to watch as a student once upon a time in England.
The BBC iPlayer?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic, man. I used to have it in the UK. Right? It's fantastic. You can watch everything on it and all the back catalogue of all the old stuff.
Exactly.
Well.
So it's like a little bit of a trip down memory lane for me.
My favourite channel on the BBC iPlayer is Dave.
Dave,
yeah. Dave is where you get all the old Top Gear, all the old mechanic shows, all the old like stuff.
I'm not sure whether I'm making it up, but I think I remember seeing this episode where they drove a, I think, is it a Kanchil over a building?
Yeah, because Clarkson hated the car and he took a hammer to it and just mashed the hell out of it, right? He was saying, I shouldn't repeat this on air, actually. It was very derogatory.
Yeah, but funny nonetheless.
Very funny.
But this morning we have some other interesting stories for you. What do we have, Chuang?
Well, I talk about how YouTube serves up unlikely stars in all the most unlikely, in some of the most unlikely places, but then reality takes hold, and then it goes awry.
Dun 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 dun. And I'll be asking you whether you think outdoor living is overrated, or let's say not outdoor living, like country life is overrated. And I can already tell you my answer is yes. That's because I have to say I'm a real urban lady. But if you want to tell us what you think about our conversations, you can. Please WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We will be back after this song. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was A Touch of Grey by The War on Drugs. And good morning, I'm Wong Shaoning here with Koo Soo Chuang, and of course, this is The Morning Run, and we are going to be with you till 10 a.m. in the morning. Now, first off, is this article in the Financial Times, and it's entitled Spare Me the City Dwellers Longing for Rural Ideal. I mean, I don't know, it's basically a story about people moving to the countryside, right? Because they think, I've had enough, I've burned out, you know, COVID-19, I want to have fresh air and sunshine, I want to be out there, you know, and then they kind of just pack up and leave. And apparently, in the UK, inquiries for outside London lodging or homes have increased by as much as 43%. So the question is today, is this the same case for even KLites? Are they trying to leave the city? And is this something viable at all in the first place?
Yeah, you know, I think that cycle occurs anyway, because once you have worked in the metropolitan area for more than a number of years and you get sick of the rat race, sooner or later, people will start to feel that they want more space and more me time. I think that's inevitable. That happened even before COVID-19. I think COVID-19 basically amplified a lot of things that were already wrong. Not wrong, that were already maladjusted within the system, right? Whether it's economic machinery or whether it's people's foibles, right? Whether it's for you or not for you, I think it's inherent already. So if you already not know how to fix or change your tire, then outdoor life is not for you. I think that's a given.
Oops,
right?
Let me guess who it is for. But it's true. Yeah. Well, I guess what your point is, Chuang, is that it accelerates whatever is already there,
yeah,
right?
It just amplifies.
Just like COVID-19 accelerated the work from home phenomenon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. People already want to work from home because there's no transit time. There's a whole bunch of things, right? It just amplifies what was already maladjusted within the system.
But do you think you're being romantic about the whole notion?
No, not really. I think that people generally respond to nature, to the forest, to water, to natural beauty. People respond to that. That's why in cities we try and replicate that experience with snazzy pictures and good landscaping, but you can never replicate the real thing. Okay. So when you live in the open, wide open areas, you respond in different ways. And I think that's how the body's chemical reactions are.
Okay, I'm in the different camp because I like the outdoors, But if I know when I'm coming home. So I want to find...
That's why you can never go and live in, say, Janabai.
No,
because you cannot.
Permanently, yeah. No. I've got some friends who like, packed up and literally moved to Kuala Kubu Baru.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Not more famous than the writer of A Malaysian Journey, Rahman Rashid.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I couldn't do that. I don't mind going away for like a week or two. And I like the idea. I really do. I sometimes want some me time, wind down time. And actually look forward to the fact that there's patchy Wi-Fi. So I can't be contacted so easily. But after a while, I would say I yearn for the city life that I am, you know, I'm used to. I like these city creature comforts, like the ability to, don't laugh, have dim sum at midnight or at 6 a.m., whatever time I want. You know, if I want my har kow, I can have it whenever I want. My roti canai at whatever time I want. If I want to meet my friends around the corner at the coffee shop, I can. It's not going to be a problem. But I think the issue is that if you're living out there, your social life does have to adjust, right? Because
Absolutely.
Your friends are not around the corner anymore.
Which is why people of means have weekend retreats. Right? And that's been a thing for a long time, right?
Yes, yes.
So you have your apartment in the city, and then, you know, when the need takes you, you retreat to your place in the Hamptons, and that's where you unwind.
Oh, sorry, darling.
Depending
whether you're in the UK or in the US.
And the Malaysian equivalent is you go to your, you know, your pile in Jandabai. That's usually where the rich people are, you know. And that's the thing, right? And there's nothing wrong with that because people need balance in their lives. We've got the yin and yang thing in our makeup, and that we crave for that. Sometimes if we get too much of this, we want a bit of that. And when we get too much of that, we want to come back to the this.
Yeah, but I guess the idea is at the end of the day, or the notion is that there's no one size fit all. For some people, the countryside is really will suit them. And that's a lifestyle that you should really, really consider. It's just whether when we come to work, and, you know, unfortunately, some of us still need to make the money, whether we are able to do that living in the countryside.
Yeah. So there's,
you know, it's that balance, right?
Yeah. So there's all those people on that side, and there's all these people on this side. And then there's the in-betweens. And I would define even myself as an in-between. I've got that whole schizophrenia going on in my head. Sometimes I want to be a capitalist and sometimes I want to be a complete communist. I just don't know whether I'm coming or going half the time.
But that's a lot of us, right? I mean, we kind of maybe as
that's
we
most
get,
of us. That's
90%.
Well, I wouldn't say 90%. I'd say a lot of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is no one way of living. I think that's the point. But let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, some messages. Now stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Barracuda by Heart. And I hope that woke you up with its very... catchy beat.
70s.
All-woman band, apparently.
Yeah, hairdresser pop, right? rock.
It's a cool song, though. Anyway, you're listening to The Morning Run here with Xiao Ning and Chuang. And next on our list is actually this article by Gizmodo, right? I think it's just a portal website. And it's about videos, actually. And it's entitled, "The Death of Bon Appetit is Proof Media Companies Have No Idea What Makes Videos Work." Because Bon Appetit, and I've seen a few of them and I love them. It was these test kitchens where they would feature different writers cooking something. And the personalities of these chefs or these staff at Bon Appetit will kind of come shining through in the video, and it would be very entertaining, like how they would make, for example, like a pound cake or a meringue. And it's not so serious, so it's very entertaining, but they make it very possible that you could do this dish. You know, it wouldn't be something so like, you know, it's like a 20-step process. No, they kind of simplify it in their very funny way. So I enjoyed watching these videos, and I too am a little bit sad that, you know, this is one of, you know, it's gone into the clouds in the sky and said goodbye. There's a demise of these videos.
Yeah, the problem is, and I should give some context here, because Bon Appetit is a American monthly magazine that features food and recipes and entertainment, right? Started in 1956, just produces 10 issues a year, and is owned by Condé Nast. Condé Nast is a global media company.
Of the Vogue fame.
They publish a whole bunch of magazines, including Vogue and Architectural Digest. What happened was they I think a few years ago, started a kind of like an experiment, right? Which you should do, right? They started an experiment on YouTube where they brought to life the recipes and the people that made them, the chefs,
the behind right? scenes writers, right?
Yeah, the chefs and all these things, and the YouTube channel took off. It just caught fire. There's 6 million subscribers, huge attraction with the online watching space. And then what happened was the suits came in, the bean counters came in. And then they started imposing what they thought were their rules and restrictions, and what they thought were parameters that would allow the YouTube channel to fit into the broader corporate narrative. Right, that included paying people of color, people of a gender, a different pay. That included some kind of like some element of racism, some element of gender pay gaps, that some elements of marginalization. Which then brought into stark reality the fact that what used to work for you in a print form, in two-dimensional form, let me add, doesn't work in a three-dimensional form when you've got human beings producing videos. And oftentimes, in fact, almost all the time, these videos are labors of love, right?
Yes.
And you cannot expect what worked for you in 1956 to work in 2020 because they don't work. These people have given you their lives and their souls and
Their passion.
Their creativity and their passion. And you do not treat them like what you used to treat them in 1955, in 1956.
And apparently, I think also what happened is that they tried to use data and algorithms to find out what people wanted yes. to watch. And unfortunately, yes, analytics we know does work, but doesn't work up to some level, right? Because like you say, you know, it can tell you that oh, okay, maybe this viewer wants to watch how, like a Victoria sponge cake is made, for example. But who makes the Victoria sponge cake? And that will make a world of difference. Because if you have a robotic person who has no passion for cooking, yeah. making that Victoria sponge with no personality coming through the video because he or she is following a script to the T, that's not going to be entertainment at all for anybody.
Yeah, what I think Condé Nast got wrong was they allowed the algorithms to guide creativity rather than help shape the direction. Okay, I think there's a very subtle difference here. So the three unlikely YouTube stars that emerged from Bon Appetit were respectively Priya Krishna, Rick Martinez, and Sola.
He of the blue nail polish fame.
Yeah, and obviously some kind of Hispanic yes. origin. And Sola Alwali, right? And you can tell that these three individuals don't fit into your Anglo-Saxon, white, middle-class backgrounds that the Condé Nast suits think they should fit into.
No, but they were, I would have to say, and I love their videos, it's just extremely entertaining.
So this
even if you're not going to bake a cake,
correct.
You know.
So it's good entertainment. So there's a case study here for media companies, not just in America, but in Malaysia as well, including BFM, okay? You have a sauce. You've got a secret sauce. You protect that sauce at all costs. You do not, at all costs, allow the suits to come in and start counting beans at the expense of your sauce. Because once you do that, that's the end of you.
On some level, I agree with you, Truong, but on another level, somebody still has to count the beans. Because if you don't count the beans, the businesses can't continue also.
Correct.
Right? So the bean, so you still need to make a buck.
Correct.
At the end
but
of
the sauce has given you the beans to start with. Without the sauce, you don't get no beans. That's the problem.
So let the creative people do the creative thing and let
yes.
the accountants do their accounting
yes,
thing.
Yes, and you
is
don't tell
it?
Them what to do.
Yeah, that's true because media is fast evolving and there are no set formulas. Formulas keep on changing and we know that in the new media landscape. But let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin and to take us there is The Spirit of Radio by Rush. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Wong Shaoning here with Koo Soo Chuang and this is The Morning Run. And that song was Sweet Disposition by The Temper Trap, apparently an Australian band, which is kind of cool, actually. But at this moment, we're going to be taking a look at what's happening around the world. And first off, is our friendly neighbour Singapore. By the way, the borders have reopened for Malaysians and Singaporeans who want to travel and go back to work, albeit there are some restrictions out there and a little bit on the complicated side because I think it involves some quarantine before you go into Singapore and then you get like X number of days and then before you can come back to Malaysia. And I think there's also a limit in terms of the number of days you're allowed. But anyway, I think Singapore has really felt the effects of COVID-19 being a very, very open economy, very dependent on trade with mainly services, right, as their main revenue, because they don't really have any natural resources unlike Malaysia. So they have actually fired another round of stimulus to cushion this blow from COVID-19. Yesterday, Deputy Prime Minister Heng Swee Keat announced additional support measures of 8 billion Singapore dollars, which extend the wage subsidies and apparently are targeted at the hard-hit aviation and hospitality sectors.
Yeah, so I think what is interesting is that the government will provide subsidies of as much as 25% for each new hire younger than 40%.
But then 40 years old, not
40. Sorry, 40 years old. 40 years
I haven't gone to the percent yet.
Yeah, yes. But the government steps in with one of every two Sing dollars if you hire or if you retain people who are 40 years old and above. So that is interesting. That is very interesting. So they are providing more assistance to keep the older folk in business, in employment.
I think that makes logical sense,
it
actually.
It does, because they're also more experienced and they bring more to the table ability.
I think in economic cycle, as companies downsize and try to cut costs, you know, ironically, some people say, oh, it'll be the young that might be affected. And sometimes that's true. But in your attempt to cut costs, you might actually also get rid of staff who are more expensive, which tend to be older,
yeah,
and choose younger staff, right? So maybe that's the case in Singapore.
That might be the case. So the Sing government will also provide 320 million Singapore dollars in vouchers to residents to boost domestic tourism. That means they're giving you money, essentially, to go out and eat, drink and spend.
Which is something China did, I think, quite shortly after COVID-19, right? Rather than put money directly into someone's pockets, because you might actually just save it rather than spend it. So I guess the point of the vouchers is that you have to utilize it. And so it will kind of have a multiplier effect and try and, you know, keep this boost on the domestic economy. Now, what's interesting is also the measures will be financed in part by unused expenditures from earlier budgets. So apparently it doesn't require additional funds. And this comes on the back of the last round of stimulus that was in May. So since the pandemic started, Singapore has spent or pledged nearly 100 billion Singapore dollars. But we all know they're a country of quite sizable reserves. And you know what? Nobody really knows how much.
Yeah, it's a big grey area there. But it's interesting because they got unused expenditure from budget. We make a budget and then we've been blowing it every year since the late
90s. Yeah, we have a deficit.
Every single year, in right about February, March, we go back to Parliament for a supplementary budget. And we just did it about 2 weeks ago, 13 billion, as usual, as per normal. So why make a budget in the first place if you're going to break it every year? But Singapore is a country of stark contrast because they have got no natural resources, as you say, but they've got huge surpluses because they're just more prudent, I think. And I think more importantly, they have got fewer leakages.
Well, I think, you know, a country is not unlike another, like us, you know, save for a rainy day. And the rainy day is here today, right? I mean, it's due to COVID-19. So clearly Singapore has been, you know, squirreling away little bits of money here and there and has in turn become very useful for them at this juncture. But let us know what you think about any of these stories or anything we've discussed this morning. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals, and we'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Xiaoning here with Koo Soo Chuang, and of course, this is The Morning Run. And that was Forever Now by Cole Chisel. And at this moment, we are going to be taking a look at the newspapers and of course the online portals. And in front of me is the Malaysia Reserve with the headline, Greater Economic Challenges Await Johor. And I think, yeah, the state that's probably most impacted by the closure of borders has been, of course, Johor with Singapore, right? Because a lot of, as many as apparently 300,000 Johorians travel daily into Singapore to work. And since COVID-19, either they have been you know, not working, or they have been stuck in Singapore because you can't commute daily. And we all know the cost of living in Singapore is one of those things which is very, very high. So definitely the state has been impacted. Also, there's no tourism. Singaporeans aren't coming over to spend their money. There are three, for every one Singapore dollar, three ringgit. They've not been spending their, you know, their Sing dollars in Johor, unfortunately.
It's fantastic.
Impacting the state, though.
They love to come here, and then they just love to spend. And they're actually single-handedly driving up Johor. They have been single-handedly driving up Johor prices for years now. It's in fact parts of JB resemble Singapore. I'm serious.
Well,
have you been there recently? It does.
Well, I'm sure a lot of the money or the boom that we've seen in Johor has been driven by, you know, Malaysians working in Singapore, Sing dollar and bringing it back to spend. But what do you have in your papers, John?
Well, I have a question for you. Have you heard of a guy called Wong Tik Son?
No.
Wong Tik Son, okay? He, along with Lim Wee Chai and Stanley Tai, I think, are all now rubber glove billionaires.
Oh, Riverstone.
Not just a ringgit
billionaire.
It's
a typing company, by the way.
It's a typing company. He's now worth $1.2 billion, okay? And I also want to point out the fact that Lim Wee Chai, I think now, because he's got about 25% of Top Glove, and Top Glove is worth about 70 billion ringgit, give or take, right? He's actually worth more than Donald Trump, Lim Wee Chai.
Wow.
Believe it or not, yeah, right? And he doesn't make a song or dance about it. In a related development, Maybank is suggesting that in the upcoming budget 2021, we might see a 10% increase in corporate tax, specifically targeting glove companies which have been profiting from the huge demand globally for rubber glove. Of course, it's a bit of a Robin Hood situation, the rich giving back to the poor. In other words, it's the country and the people. But that's what they are suggesting in a research note.
Yeah, it's a similar article in the Edge Daily, the CEO morning brief, sorry. But apparently, Top Glove and even Magma, which is the Association for Rubber Gloves, they have not been consulted about this windfall tax. But based on past practices by the government, right, a windfall tax will be typically imposed on commodity-related products or the natural resource segment, and it's never been on the manufacturing sector. I think partially because in the past, margins were quite wafer thin, so it was just a question of, you know, size, and you needed to generate that kind of volume. But these glove makers in today's COVID-19 era are really making an exceptional amount of profit, and at the same time their share price has come under pressure. So the Edge is asking, is it an opportune time for bargain hunting? Because, for example, Comfort Glove is down 47% from its recent peak, and Top Glove is also down 21%. So is it time to bottom fish? Is the bottom here?
It's what the traders are calling the Sputnik moment, right? Because Vladimir Putin has said that the Russians have found a vaccine for COVID-19, and that could reach commercialization sooner or later. Also, Sabah polls. The Sabah High Court decides on Friday whether Tan Sri Musa Aman and his 32 other cohorts, the challenge of the dissolution, has merit. But in the meantime, the Election Commission is going ahead with preparations for the 27th, for state elections on September 26th.
And nominations on the 12th.
Nominations on the 12th. So that's what all the portals are now. The Star headline is going with that on the front page.
Yeah, and I'm going to be looking at the Malaysian Kini now. And the headline is, can Perikatan Nasional last with just 111 MPs? And this is on the back of the PN government. I think they barely managed to pass the Supply Reallocation of Appropriated Expenditure Bill 2020 at Dewan Rakyat yesterday. It was 111 versus 106. And five MPs were absent, which is why we got this number. So the question is, you know, is the government stable, which is something I think the leader of the opposition, Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim, is asking this morning. But let us know what you think. And that's because that's all we have from the papers this morning. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we will be speaking to strategists about where markets are going. But first here, Say It Ain't So by Weezer. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.